America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yo. Hello.
So this episode we're recording on Friday, September 28th, 2018. It's going to be the last show of the month. And thank God, because this whole month has just made me feel gross. Like, it really has. Like, do you guys remember that sort of not really old, but also not kind of recent episode of South Park? The one that was about Honey Boo Boo and how James Cameron tries to go down deep in the ocean so he can quote-unquote raise the bar? Because it felt like the bar had been lowered so much that just everything had gone to shit.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of it, Cameron somehow finally manages it, and then he somehow manages to raise it back up. Mm. And suddenly everybody has this realization that, holy crap, this is awful. I kind of feel like everybody in America feels like that today.
I'm drinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we should.
Folks, I ain't going to sugarcoat it. The shit that's been going down with Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court nomination process has been a giant, very uncomfortable shit show pretty much from the first day. Mm. And it got probably to its peak yesterday when both Kavanaugh himself and Dr. Ford came forward to give their testimony and to answer questions from the committee. And, it was gross. All of it is very, very gross. I'm going to have to take a shower for about a month to feel clean again after all of this. But you know what? We don't have to get to that just yet. That's going to be, of course, our major story for the day, but for the night. But we got other stuff to get to first and much more pleasing topics to come afterwards, we promise. First and foremost, as we always do, we have to start off. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm still making my way through Dune. I'm about a third of the way through so far. So that's going pretty well. I'm enjoying that. And the spice has begun to flow. So that's a thing. So that's going good. I'm still playing Shining Force on a GBA. I'm not really much to say there because it's...
Good port.
It's a very good port. And They added a lot. I'm kind of surprised it never made it to a console of that day, but at least this GBA port is pretty good. I hope they re-release that someday.
It would be consistent with what Sega is doing these days.
They're doing all of the re-releasing. we talked a little bit about that on a Day Zero update with the Genesis Mini getting delayed. Yep. So there's possibilities there. And apart from that, I've also been watching The Expanse, which continues to be great. That's probably some of the best science fiction on television right now. Now it's not on television anymore. It's going to be the best science fiction on Amazon when season 4 shows up. So,
there's that.
And apart from that, I've been listening to some music. Kind of tripped over a band yesterday called Love Bites. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of them before.
That's one of like the myriad of Japanese all-female power metal bands.
Correct,
that have started showing up in the last few years. Yeah. Because apparently something's news in to the me water too. Over there.
They're good. And also like really prolific, apparently. They did an EP to get signed, a full album, and last year, and this year, another 4-song EP, along with all of their touring and stuff. So, these girls are working hard.
You'll find that to be consistent with the Japanese music industry as a whole, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're legit good musicians, too, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that they're pulling off is, remarkable. And I'm watching them play live, and I'm just seeing Midori shredding on that really complicated guitar solo in Hammer of Wrath, and she's like, "Yeah, no fucks given." It's I got this. So, really, really good band. I highly recommend everybody check them out if you haven't haven't heard of them. If you're into like power metal, definitely worth looking at. Just be aware, since they are Japanese and they are singing in English, there is a very thick accent.
Yeah.
So
yes, there is.
Yeah. Although on the second EP, that's actually seems to be getting a little bit better. So I'm guessing all that live performing is starting to pay off. So not that I'm advocating like, you know, whitewashing or anything. I'm just saying the more that they do it in English, the more familiar they're going to get with the language, and it's just going to get easier on them to do. So,
and it's been my observation throughout all sorts of genres that it's kind of like singing is where accents go to die.
That's especially true with British singers.
Yes.
And especially it's like, you know, when with power metal, especially it's like the accent doesn't really matter. You know, she's just the sheer vocal power and passion that Masaya has there. It just basically transcends accents and languages. So, check it out. So how about you?
Apparently, two of the chicks in that band were originally in a band called Destros.
Yeah.
Iho and Haruna.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, they have experience. So.
Yeah. It's like, but all five of them, it's like they were all in different bands, but together. Mm-hmm. There's just something that really gels. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, how about you, Pat?
I'm still going through this giant archive of Loveline episodes and enjoying the hell out of it. It's just good to be able to go back and revisit those, you know, stuff I've listened to since I was a teenager. So that's been a lot of fun. I'm still grinding away at all different modes in NHL 19. Just the sheer amount of content in this game is ridiculous. I've said it show after show. There's just so many ways to enjoy this game, and they're all amazing. And so, it's definitely, you know, it comes with my highest recommendation. And I've been getting a little more into it than I already was because I'm getting ready for the actual season to start. Preseason hockey is already very much underway, and the KHL is already well into its regular season. And so, best time of the year for sports and for hockey. I'm really excited about that. And then the Soul Calibur 6 open beta is live right now, so I'll be looking into that here after the show.
Oh, nice.
And apparently there's no training mode or anything, so I'll just be relying on what grow gameplay I got in at Evo.
Yeah.
We'll see how far that gets me.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's just a beta, so pretty much everybody's going to be in the same boats.
Yeah. Mm. That's what I figure.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's coming out on the 19th, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Not too far off. Hopefully that netcode turns out to be solid, because...
Oof. Yeah, it needs it. Tekken 7 has pretty good net codes, so Okubo was on that project, so I wouldn't be surprised if they just used the same net code.
Yeah.
Other than that, I've just been paying attention to the news and at the moment drinking about it.
Yes, and now we're doing the show because of that, so
yay. All right, Chris, what about you?
I've been continuing to play some more Spider-Man, and so I've gotten past the what they call the first act. There's specifically a trophy; it's called the first act. So, which is when they sort of introduce Miles Morales into the story, in a pretty big way. That I look forward to seeing how that goes afterwards. But so I've gotten all of the Black Cat collectibles. Which she sort of sets up these lookouts, stakeouts, I guess. These different places that she wants to break in. And you have to, like, sort of figure out where she broke in, because she leaves, like, a little cat doll at the door or window of these places.
Nice.
And by the end, it sets up this whole nice little bit that's you sort of figure out sort of what her whole ruse is all about. I don't know if she gets an actual role in the game itself, but they do some interesting stuff there. That just that game has some really good writing in it. Which, like, comparing it to like Batman Arkham series, like, there's not really great writing there. It's just great characters, really, in the Batman series, which that is just part of the Batman sort of universe. Whereas Spider-Man, this game, they do a great job with the different writing for the various characters. Like, MJ stuff is really good. You get a great sense that, you know, her and Peter had dated previously and broken up. And so you get that there's a lot of baggage there for why they are no longer together, but also why they don't hate each other. And that sort of stuff that they do a good job of, and I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. And the J. Jonah Jameson stuff is great. His podcast in there. Because when you do the research test kind of side mission stuff, he gets a lot of... That's where a lot of like his crazy stuff comes out. Because the research stations are all set up by Harry Osborn, his son. Yeah, he sets them up as a means of like studying various things around the city. Like one is for like toxicity of the water in the bay, or at the ports, and you know, studying the pipelines under the city and all this bunch of stuff. And every single one, you come to it like realizing, oh shit, everything's about to go real bad and catastrophic. Which is just kind of funny. It's like, oh, the world is about to end, kind of. But the things you do, he ends up finding out about, like, just has ridiculous reactions to. Like, there's one that you run your suit through the smog in the city to, like, analyze it. And so he's talking about how Spider-Man's getting high off the smog. there's one where... There is something going on with the pigeons. I think they're potentially going to spread like a new avian flu. And so you're going around trying to infect the pigeons with the antidote to sort of prevent that from spreading to humans. And so he's talking about Spider-Man like trying to eat pigeons because there's the spider-eating bird or the bird-eating spider, if you know about that thing. And so he's like, oh, I know about this. Spider-Man seems to be just eating the pigeons in the park. All this ridiculous stuff. And that's where, like, the Alex Jones craziness seems to come out. Yeah, and there's also a good bit if you wear the Spider-Punk outfit for a good bit. Mm-hmm. You will start talking shit about what does Spider-Man know about punk. I was around for punk when punk started and that shit. It's a lot of great stuff. Assuming I can get all the episodes to pop up, I will definitely have to do a sort of a long video of just all of that stuff.
Yeah.
The one knock is that you can't listen to it. You can't, like, queue it up to listen to it while you're playing.
Hmm.
So you have to literally sit at the menu and just listen to it there.
No.
Which is, I think it always bugs me when games have that. When they have, like, lore or audio files or whatever, that they don't just let you, like, play that stuff while you're playing the game.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not doing like story stuff. Because there's no real reason they couldn't do that. But yeah, that's been going pretty well. And that's a game that I could go through it really quickly if I just ignored all the side stuff, but I've been just kind of soaking it in. And I've been getting better at the stealth part of it, which has meant I'm doing a little bit less of the combat, though. The combat really comes into its own once you start unlocking more of the abilities. And sort of just giving you more options for what to do in all this craziness. Because I've been doing some more of the combats. They have bases around, which initially I have the Fisk bases full of his lackeys that are still around. Hmm. And now I've got the demons that are the lackeys of Mr. Negative. And so I've been just doing some of those. And there's a lot of guys around, but having that good arsenal of abilities just makes it really easy to just not only accomplish they give you like two goals I think to do for each one to maximize your XP and all that, but also being able to get through without you know, just getting worked. Because I can go around, I could do some, like, stealth enemies, like, take them out. Because, yeah, something similar to in Batman Arkham, you can sort of string up guys by your grappling hook. So hang them around.
Yeah.
There's that sort of thing, though I like doing it on the sides of buildings. Because he just slams them into the side of the building and webs them up right there. It also is, like, a nice attention to detail. Like, if you see Spider-Man knock enemies off the top of buildings, if you look after that, you can see them attached to the walls of nearby buildings. Because he uses a web at some point to keep them from just falling off the top of buildings and dying. I really like his attention to detail for that stuff. But yeah, like the combat areas are get a lot better as you get more abilities and different tools you can use for your for how you take them down. Yeah, and it's really fun. It's a really fun game. I am looking to start Life is Strange 2 sometime this weekend, but I want to get through Before the Storm. So I never got back to that, so I just finished episode 2 today. And that has been also a lot of fun to get through. So it's focused on Chloe before the events of the first season, where kind of her dad has passed away, I think, 2 years prior. And you're kind of in the kind of prequel part of it where you're learning about her relationship with Amber, Rachel Amber, who is a big figure in the first season where you just see her missing posters all over the place. And so here you sort of get to see what their relationship was, and you also get to kind of shape it a bit. And I really like this second episode was actually pretty funny at times. Because there's a bit where you get to actually take part in a play. It is The Tempest.
Yep, and, The Tempest. Yes. Pretty sure that was Shakespeare's last play before his death.
Yeah, so as a result of the events of the first episode, you kind of get... You can get suspended or expelled depending on what you do. But, and Rachel Amber is supposed to be the star, and she gets removed from the play. Depending on what you do, she may or may not get removed from it. But there's a fun bit where, in my part, she gets removed from being able to participate, which she is not a huge fan of because the bitchy girl from the first season of Life is Strange, I forget what her name is, Victoria Chase. She's the understudy. And there's a good bit where you talk to Victoria before they're going to start, and Rachel Amber gives her some tea. You can probably figure out what happens. So as you go out, they're sort of doing a huddle, sort of talking about what's going to happen. And she just passes out, and nobody reacts to it. She's just lying on the ground, and everybody's like, okay, so we need two people now. And since Rachel Amber's there, she's like, well, I'll take my role back since she cannot do it. And then Chloe gets to take another role, Ariel. Rachel Amber is, I forget what the role is called, but the wizard, sort of the main character, at least what they show. Yeah, and so you kind of you don't have to recite the lines, because before you start, you get to look at the script for the bits they have you do, which is, if you do them right, you get some pretty cool stuff with there, because the director is kind of amazed that you are able to pull it off. But then the two of you kind of go off into this ad-libbed part where they kind of play off of their own romance a bit, which is a pretty cool bit to do. Yeah, and there's some other bits later on that are pretty funny, but yeah, it's a really good episode. I'm looking forward to getting through the third episode. I'm also trying to clean up some of the trophies, because here they have graffiti is like the collectible here. There are certain spots you can do graffiti at. and you can kind of pick one of two different things to do there. I think I missed two spots, so I'm trying to go do those, as well as just getting ready for episode 3. Then I got the 4th episode to do, but I don't think there's any trophies for that one. I think since that's not something that everybody's necessarily going to play, they didn't add trophies for that. Hmm. But, yeah, I think with Telltale shutting down, I'm also going to try and get through my backlog of Telltale stuff.
Yeah.
Because I have the 3 seasons of The Walking Dead on my PS4, The Wolf Among Us, Borderlands, I think Game of Thrones, and I think maybe one more thing. I probably have Michonne as well for The Walking Dead. It's a lot of stuff. And stuff I haven't necessarily played through. I played the first 2 seasons of Walking Dead on PS3, but not on PS4. Hmm. So they never really got the cross-save stuff worked out on The Walking Dead for whatever reason. Like, they're... I don't know why they never got it figured out, even though they have the sort of Telltale network that you could sign up in. But yeah, that's... I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. And kind of just farted around into some other games. I got some more trophies and everything, which is a game you can actually just have it play itself and earn trophies for you. But now it's stuck in Purgatory.
Okay.
And I don't know how to get it out so I can get the other stuff. And it's real weird where the game is kind of stuck at now. And what else? I started up Hollow Knight on PS4. Hmm. Haven't done too much in it. I just got to the point where I got the first map and sort of got back up to the town outside at the top of the map to buy some upgrades, and then I'm basically stuck there right now. Being able to play that now, I know like what's going on for the most part from playing the Switch version. It's a little bit easier to get around and figure out what I need to do. But yeah, it's definitely a little bit rough early on because you don't really have any of the extra abilities and such. So it kind of feels more limited in what you can do.
Yeah.
So you basically just have the attack button. That's about it. I know there's like, I think there's double jump. There's some extra attacks you can do, and there's like a charge attack as well. Stuff that opens up the combat a bit more than just either attack above you or attack to your sides or whatever. But yeah, that's also been nice, and that's kind of been it. Weather's actually cooling down pretty nicely. It's been in the 60s for most of the week. That's also been with a lot of rain.
Yeah.
So it's not been great, but otherwise it's a lot better than the 90s we had a few weeks ago.
Tell me about it.
It's like, oh, this is what fall is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. I've got it. Valkyria Chronicles 4. In my PS4. I've been playing it for... it's good.
Mm. So they made up for...
more than made up for it. For one thing, they went right back to the original timeline. So we are still... So for those of you who remembered playing the original Valkyria Chronicles way back in the aughts, you remember in the first Valkyria Chronicles, it's basically a fantasy version of World War II. It's between the Atlantic Federation and the Eastern Imperial Alliance. And in the original Valkyria Chronicles, they were focused on the Gallian front when the Imperials invaded the nation of Gallia, which is kind of sort of analogous to Sweden or, Norway, something like that.
Holland, Scandinavian territory.
The Netherlands, basically. Basically them trying to sort of mount a resistance movement and fight the Imperials out of the country. In Valkyria Chronicles 4, although there are a bunch of Gallian characters that you're playing, they are primarily members of what's called Squad E, which is like a sort of semi-elite ragtag group of various people who, amongst other things, took the Ranger course in the Federation military and were the only team to all pass with 100%. So, and also, unlike in the first Valkyria Chronicles, where you are basically a resistance force trying to fight the invaders out of your country, in this case, you're part of a several million strong army that's taking part in what's called Operation Northern Cross, which is essentially a alternate version of Operation Barbarossa, but with the roles reversed. Instead of in our world, where Operation Barbar was by Nazi Germany invading the Soviet Union, in this case, it's the Democratic Atlantic Federation invading the imperialistic Eastern Imperial Alliance. And if I remember anything about what happens in Operation Barbarossa, I kind of have some predictions on how this is going to end. Because, you know, Napoleon should have told you, if you're going to try and conquer Russia, you better pack some winter clothes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Whoops.
Well, the idea had merit.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're part of this one squad that's doing... Basically, it's... Gameplay-wise, it's basically very similar to the original Valkyria Chronicles. You know, you pick your units, you know, you arrange them how you want, and then you go out and deploy onto the field, and then, you know, you're giving a certain number of what's called CP points, which, you know, is the amount of times you can take a... You can pick a unit and then move and, you know, basically do whatever you want with them until, you know, then that number goes down and then it's the enemy's turn.
Yeah, you can basically use
and of course
units like, multiple times if you want.
Yeah, but the thing is because, you know, if you use them multiple times, they'll tire out. So, yeah. You know, the amount of, you know, the amount of distance they can cover after the second and third turn decreases, you know, exponentially every time you choose them.
Yeah. But it's a nice, like, change of pace from the mm-hmm. typical one at a time thing. Like, here's some freedom to it. If you feel like at the end of a battle, you just mm-hmm. need one more turn out of this one unit, you can just finish it off.
Yeah. You basically have most of the same types of units as you did in the original Valkyria Chronicles. There's, of course... the main character this time is a guy named Claude, and he's the guy who's also the guy in the tank.
Isn't there a dog in the tank?
Just like in the original.
Huh? Is there a dog in the
tank?
The
dog is actually part of the medical team.
Okay.
Yeah. The dog, by the way, is a little Akita dog named Ragnarok. They call him Rags. But he's part of the medical, of the med team.
As you do. As you do.
Yeah. And of course with the tank, you can, you know, fire with the main barrel. You can also use one of the machine guns that's attached to it, or you can fire a mortar round, you know, basic tank stuff. You also get another tank this time around as well, driven by a different guy, a six-wheel AC tank, which means it can go around rougher terrain. But it also isn't as, its armor isn't quite as thick as the other one is, so. And then after that, you've got your other main. You got your scouts, who are the people who can cover the most distance and have sort of the more middle-grade equipment. They have a pretty basic rifle with six shots that can cover, you know, can aim at a good distance. Then, of course, you got your snipers. They're the ones, they can't quite cover a good distance, but they're obviously, because they have sniper rifles, they can basically take any character out with one shot, you know, depending on how far away they are from the target. Then you have your shock troopers. Those are the guys with the machine guns. The distance they can cover is kind of mid-range, but because they have machine guns, they can basically fire off a lot of rounds at once and potentially take out more than one enemy, depending on how close and grouped together they are. Then you have your weapons-wise, they're probably the weakest, but they also are in charge of refilling your ammunition and can also do repairs on the tanks. Then there's the Grenadiers, the guys who, if you remember in the original Valkyria Chronicles, the Grenadiers were the guys who walked around with like the giant lances that acted as like rocket launchers.
Yeah.
Those are the Grenadiers, except they look more like actual rocket launchers now instead of, weird anime shit. Hmm. And then finally, the new class that you actually have, and, this one is the Artillery. And this is the new class, and they basically have mortars. And they can basically lob these big blue Ragnarite grenades that can take out two or more enemies at once, depending on how grouped together they are. And also has a longer range than the regular characters have with just grenades. This one can actually cover like twice the distance. The trade-off is that they're kind of slow because, obviously they're carrying a mortar around with them. They're kind of heavy.
Yeah.
And second of all, it takes them a little while to set a few seconds to set up their equipment because, again, this is like a mortar cannon that they've got, and mortar cannons take a couple minutes to set up. To get the aim right, get the stance, get loaded. And basically, that's pretty much the gameplay. Your character has all of the, your enemy obviously has all the same classes. That's pretty much the game so far. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
People have been making complaints about the fact that a lot of the cinematics are the talking head variety, which is basically exactly like it was in the first Valkyria Chronicles, so that doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, they were never very... they never really went for it much with the cutscenes or anything. It was like the dialogue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of typical JRPG.
Pretty much. It's good shit. I'll have more to talk about when I get further in. So other than that, of course, I'm doing my usual reading regimen. I started reading because this was kind of out of left field, but I found it at the bookstore, and I decided to give it a try. Do you guys know who Bret Easton Ellis is? He's the guy who wrote American Psycho.
Oh, okay, him.
Yeah, that guy. Hmm. The very first book he wrote which made him famous, was a book called Less Than Zero, and it's basically, it is 80s as fuck. About a bunch of like rich yuppie like teenage kids who basically spend their entire existence taking drugs, having casual sex, and going to various parties. And the guy that's basically telling the story is this guy named Clay, and basically he's sort of burned himself out so badly on it that everything just kind of happens as he describes it. So it's only until a few pages in when you realize that there's some really awful shit happening right now. It's been so numb to everything that it just doesn't really affect him.
Hmm.
It's good stuff. Genuinely compelling. And finally, of course, I'm doing Netflix stuff. I still have to finish the latest season of BoJack. And I still have to finish American Vandal. And I still got to watch The Dragon Prince. I haven't had a chance to get to that just yet. But I want to, because some of the alumni from Avatar The Last Airbender made that show, and I've been hearing good stuff. That's pretty much been my week.
All right.
Anybody got anything else they want to add before we go on?
No, I'm all good.
All right, well then. I guess it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, and that's Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, due to contemporary current events, I think it'd be revisit sort of the reason why, as we're talking about these, you know, this whole discussion about confirming Judge Kavanaugh for Supreme Court justice, why exactly emotions are running so high right now. And it has to do with the confirmation of Justice Clarence Thomas back in 1991. So, basically, what because I want to sort of go through this event and just sort of let people who are listening understand why exactly is it that everybody kind of went once this this all started to happen, people started to realize, oh shit, we need to take this shit seriously. And it's all because of this. So, okay, back in October of 1991, I'm not sure if it was October, let's see. Basically, back in 1991, one of the sort of greats of the American Supreme Court, one of the giants who occupied that office, Associate Judge Thurgood Marshall, was announcing that he was planning on retiring. And so, obviously, of course, the process began was who are they going to replace him with? Well, George Bush Sr., who was president at the time, nominated a circuit judge by the name of Clarence Thomas, who had only been a judge for slightly more than a year. And according to, you know, Bush and his camp, this meant that he had a good – that, you know, he was uncorrupted and therefore had a good character because he hadn't been – I guess he hadn't been – he hadn't drowned in cynicism of being a judge for many years or some shit like that. And much like with what happened recently with Judge Kavanaugh, everybody at first thought this was pretty much going to be a shoo-in. Because, you know, it seemed like something that just wasn't – like he didn't really have much many obstacles ahead of him. He was a fairly obscure figure. He hadn't really had much of a legal career to speak of at that point. And there he's going to be our new Supreme Court Justice, and it's going to be over in about a week. And, I mean, even with the Democrats, there was little organized opposition. That is until an interview that was leaked to the press that the FBI had with a certain woman by the name of Anita Hill. Once this got out, calls came to reopen the case for the hearings, and she was called before the committee, you know, the Senate committee, to testify to the public. So the hearings happened in October of 1991. Basically, what she did is she came forth. And she described basically a long series of sexual harassment by her then boss, Clarence Thomas. She had been one of his assistants before he had become a judge, back when he was still just a lawyer. And basically she described, well, I'll just put it this way. This is what she had to say. According to her, Thomas had asked her out socially many times during the 2 years she was employed by him, which, first of all, that's already strike one, because, you know, as we know now, it's unethical for someone who is above you, for a person who is above another person in the workplace, to ask them out on personal matters because of that power balance, you know.
Yeah.
But, of course, he did it a few times, and she finally said, no, please, I am not interested. Let's just get back to work. So either out of frustration or just because he was a twit, he basically started talking about graphic sexual subjects in the workplace. Anita Hill testified that he spoke about such matters as, quote, women having sex, films showing group sex or rape scenes. On several occasions, he would graphically describe his, quote, own sexual prowess and the details of his anatomy. And then, of course, most infamously, she recounted an instance in which Thomas examined a can of Coca-Cola on his desk and then asked everyone around him, who has put pubic hair on my Coke?
Yeah.
I should also point out Anita Hill had four female witnesses that were waiting in the wings to support her credibility. to come out and testify also on her behalf, but they were never called. One of the people at the hearing, who was Republican Senator Orrin Hatch, who also happened to be in for this hearing with recently Kavanaugh, by the way, isn't that a surprise? He implied, quote, Hill was working in tandem with slick lawyers and interest groups bent on destroying Thomas's chances to join the court. Thomas claimed that Clarence Thomas himself claimed that when the accusations came out, he considered Hill a friend whom he had helped at every turn, and that he found these accusations particularly hurtful and said, I lost the belief that if I did my best, all would work out, you know, for him. As it later went on, Hill agreed to take a polygraph test, much like what happened with Dr. Ford again recently. The results showed that her statements would be credible. Though, of course, as everybody knows, a polygraph is not admissible in court. She claimed that she obligated that she felt she should come forward in order to share information on the character and actions of a person who was being considered for the Supreme Court. She claimed that after the EEOC, she had two inconsequential phone conversations with Thomas and had seen him personally on two occasions. Once to get a job reference, and the second time when he made a public appearance in Oklahoma when she was teaching. And of course, as everybody knows, she basically was humiliated in front of the national audience, where she was basically filled with, just harangued with doubts and other stuff by a bunch of old white men.
Yeah.
It's...
Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. And of course, unfortunately, as we all know, Thomas would, in fact, be nominated for the Supreme Court. Hill, for her, would in fact become a Supreme Court Justice. Hill, for her part, would become a teacher at the University of Oklahoma, become a professor of law, also open her own law firm. She would become a regular commentator on gender and race and Jews on television over the years. And recently, people started talking to her again. Once this stuff with Dr. Ford and Brett Kavanaugh came about, in fact, this month, she wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, specifically about this subject. So, I guess you can sort of understand why everybody is really trying to ones are so high right now, because it's all starting to look awfully similar to something that happened about 20 years ago.
Yep.
That has been another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. But of course, we're not talking about the Kavanaugh stuff just yet. We still have to get through our show proper, the first parts. And first is Asshole of the Week, where we got some good news for once. Bill Cosby... Yep. Now known serial rapist and former comedic star, is being sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison for sexual assault.
Yep.
He got the sexually violent predator classification. Versus just sexual offender?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that means he has to, let's see, requires lifetime registration, lifetime mandatory sex offender counseling with a treatment provider, and notification to the community that a sexually violent predator lives in the area, as well as a $25,000 fine plus the cost of prosecution as part of the sentence. The main sentence is 3 to 10 years in prison. And if you've seen the pictures of the prison, it's a new facility, fairly new facility. Like, everybody has doors. No, like a typical jail cell, like barred doors.
Yeah.
Like actual, like, like office type doors. But yeah, this is going to be in Pennsylvania. It's good that he got convicted on at least one of his, one of the assaults he's done.
Yeah. One of the many.
And they tried to use the defense that he is an old man who's at least partially blind. It's like the reason why you should get home arrest.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he needs something to show that he's actually getting punished.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because house arrest for him is basically just a vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, God. They got a quote from Andrew White, his spokesperson. They persecuted Jesus and looked what happened. I'm not saying Mr. Cosby's Jesus, but we know what this country has done to black men for centuries.
No, sorry. He's actually committed crimes. Yeah, this is not a race thing. This is a creeper.
Yes.
Let's just put it that way.
But yeah, this gives the victims of Bill Cosby some peace.
Well, I mean, karma eventually comes back to get you.
Yeah, I guess Mr. Wyatt also called the prosecution the most racist and sexist trial in the history of the United States, which is probably a bit over the line.
No fucking kidding.
Oh, dear.
Oh, he even compared it to the Brett Kavanaugh stuff.
Nope.
Of course he did.
One of you is being prosecuted for it. The other one is not. One is in a job interview.
Yeah. For what could be a lifetime appointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, all right. And we also got our hero of the week. So, in the state of Ohio, there was a neighborhood decided they were going to make and celebrate an early Christmas. And the reason is because the young boy who lives there has terminal brain cancer, and he was afraid he wouldn't live to see Christmas.
Yep, this is in the Cincinnati suburb of Coleraine Township. It's concerns a two-year-old named Brody Allen. If you look up, I think, hashtag Team Brody, you can see more pictures and videos of this parade. But they know that his favorite holiday is Christmas. They are pretty sure he only has about 2 months left, so he would miss Christmas. And they wanted to celebrate it, have at least one good memory before the bad stuff happens. So they managed to get the neighborhood to decorate their houses and get people to set up the Christmas floats and drive them through. One of the neighborhoods had hundreds of people show up, throw out candy, wave to Brody. Was on one of the I think he's in the back of a truck with his parents and a Spider-Man. It's a really nice thing they did for him.
Yeah, it just goes to
and the
that,
movie rights.
I was just gonna say, it just goes to show that despite all of the crap that's going on, there's still actually good people in this world. Let's try to remember that. It's a little hard to sometimes.
And of course, the movie rights were probably bought up pretty quickly. But yeah, that was a really nice thing they did. Definitely a good, a good antidote to all the awful shit that we're about to talk about.
I think they even said here that he doesn't really even know what's happening as far as his terminal illness. So he's kind of actually their rock. Because he is, a normal two-year-old boy.
Yeah.
While everybody around him knows that, things aren't going to be good.
Yeah.
All right. And now, get ready, folks.
We have to get to it.
Because I know I'm going to have to shower for about a month after we finish this show. Oh, God. It was just, okay, so. As we talked about earlier, when Judge Kavanaugh was first nominated, people pretty much thought that it was going to be a smooth process. The Republicans control basically all of the branch, other than the Supreme Court right now, the Republicans basically control all of the government right now. They got the House, they got the Senate, they got the presidency. It was pretty much going to be smooth sailing until this woman, Miss Dr. Ford, came forward talking about this awful incident that happened to her about 30 years ago when she was 15 years old, involving she is accusing Judge Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge of pushing her into a room, locking the door, holding her down on the bed, covering her mouth so she wouldn't scream, and then basically molesting her. While Mark Judge sort of sat to the side and watched. And they basically all just kind of laughed at him. At her, basically, as it was happening. Then everything fucking went to shit. Suddenly we got a second and then a third accuser coming forward.
It seems like the plausibility of those gets lower with each one. Not to say that there's, like, to doubt him or anything, but the second accuser happened at Yale, when they were at Yale. Like she said, that he exposed himself at a drunken dormitory party, thrust his penis in her face, and caused her to touch it without her consent as she pushed him away.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I didn't drink. Like, that sort of stuff. And people that were there at the same time as them was like, you fucking drank all the time, you idiot. Like, all this sort of shit.
He was actually known for, apparently, when he was younger, he was known for being basically full-on blackout drunk.
Yep. The third accuser is being represented by Michael Avenatti. So there's at least some credibility there.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure what the circumstance of that one is. Let's see. Spiked the drinks of girls. Oh, yeah, this was the parties that were kind of, I don't know. It's very, like, sex parties, I guess you'd call it.
It's like, it was like a fraternity. It was a fraternity thing.
Yeah, like, get girls going on.
And, get girls really drunk and then have guys run train on them, basically.
Like, any ounce of this stuff being true should be disqualifying.
Yeah.
The fact that we got to third accuser and he's still viable says a lot about the Republican Party.
Yeah. And basically just saw the state of the country itself right now.
And we had some seemingly bullshit accusers come up after this. Like, two guys that said they were the ones that raped Ford, Miss Ford.
Hmm.
And it's like, that seems a stretch. That these two random guys just show up. It's like, hey, we did this crime that can still be arrested for and all this.
Because
That's why Kavanaugh will not admit to it at all. Because there would still be legal stuff that could be done if she wanted. Wednesday we had Trump's press conference where he just rambled like a crazy old guy.
Yeah, it was his first open press conference that he's done in several months.
Yeah. And so here they wrote up like the 10 most astonishing moments of this press conference.
Oh, these are good.
Yeah, he calls Kavanaugh one of the highest quality people he's ever met, which could be true. Because he knows tons of shitty people.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
this is like bragging
that Donald Trump we're talking about.
Yeah,
the bar is very low on the people that Trump knows.
Yep.
Many of them are going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So Kavanaugh not going to jail, at least yet, is very much a high bar. Let's see. Yeah, because a lot of these are people asking questions to him. Mr. President, there are now three women accusing Judge Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct. Are saying that all three of those women are liars? Is there anything that could be said at this point tomorrow that could cause you to withdraw the nomination? Anything at all? Trump says, I won't get into that game. I will only tell you this. This is one of the highest quality people that I've ever met. And everybody that knows him says the same thing. And these are all false to me. These are false accusations in certain cases. In certain cases, even the media agrees with that.
The media you're referring to is Breitbart.
Yeah, number two.
By the way, keep that part about him not going to get an investigation going in mind, because it's going to come back in just a minute.
Yeah,
but keep going.
Number two involves George Washington. He said, look, if we brought George Washington here and we said, We had George Washington. The Democrats will vote against him, just so you understand.
Well,
he may have had a bad past.
No, the dude did own slaves, so...
Yeah. And he may have had a bad past.
Also, he wasn't a jurist or a lawyer. He was a soldier and a general.
Yeah.
Hmm. You
know? Let's see, as it continues, he may have had some, I think, accusations made. Didn't he have a couple of things in his past? George Washington would be voted against 100% by Schumer and the con artists. I mean, 100%. 100%. So it really doesn't matter from their standpoint. It's like, if he came back now and was, like, still on the slave thing and all that, like, yeah. I think most people would be against slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's 2018, and that's not been a thing for over 100 years. 150 years.
Unless you're a felon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. There's problems from almost, what, 250 years ago, somewhere?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed a lot. He might be for gun control, seeing what sort of guns we have now. Like, don't use old people as, like, some bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People that have been long since dead. Mm. He was also against fascism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he'd probably say, fuck you, Trump.
He probably would.
Trump says sexual misconduct allegations against him influence his opinion, which, of course. Yeah. It doesn't impact my opinion. You know why? Because I've had a lot of false charges made against me. I'm a very famous person, unfortunately. But I've had a lot of false charges made against me, really false charges. I know friends that have had false charges. People want fame. They want money. They want whatever. So when I see it, I view it differently than somebody sitting home watching television where they say, oh, Judge Kavanaugh, this or that. And they link the 19 women who accused President Trump of sexual misconduct.
Hmm.
Number four, Trump calls allegations part of a con job. Democrats are actually con artists because they know how quality this man is. They've destroyed a man's reputation, and they want to destroy it even more. I think people are going to see that in the midterms, what they have done to this family, what they've done to these children, these beautiful children of his, and what they have done to his wife. I know it's a big fat con job. I've never heard anything about his wife or his kids. This whole process. Yeah.
No, they haven't even been in the news.
I've only seen his wife on that Fox News bit where she didn't really talk at all.
Yeah, well, Fox News.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trump says his preference is to keep Rod Rosenstein. So that was a weird thing that happened this week where people thought Rod Rosenstein had quit as like a precursor to getting fired. She's like, no, fuck you, I quit, sort of thing.
Yeah,
that, of course, didn't happen.
Yeah, they never had the meeting yet. Where he would supposedly fire him. This would be their way to sort of bum-rush the whole Russia investigation and get rid of it. Yeah, he just kind of says, I would much prefer keeping Rob Rosenstein. Much prefer, many people say, I have the right to absolutely fire him. He did not say it. He said he did not say it. He said he does not believe that. Nobody in this room believes it. He just rambles on a lot. There's a bit with a Kurdish reporter where he called him Mr. Kurd.
Oh, that is so Manhattan. God damn.
And he said he loves the Kurds because they're fighters.
Yeah, so why are you giving all those weapons to the Turks so they can exterminate the Kurds, you the crap?
Yeah. Let's see. Number seven, Trump says women are very angry. No shit.
Well, you're president, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. You know, I got 52% with women. Everyone said it's been happening. 52%. Women are so angry, and I frankly think they like what the Republicans are doing, but I think they would have liked to have seen it go a lot faster. But give them their day in court. Let somebody else have a day in court, but the ones that I find, I mean, I have men that don't like it, but I have women that are incensed at what's going on. I've always said women are smarter than men. I said that a lot, and I mean it. Women are incensed at what's going on. That's, the last part's true. They're mad. They're smarter than men. They understand what's going on. Oh, man, it's...
yeah, it's just ramblings, and some of it is just the ramblings of a delusional person,
yeah,
but other parts of it are very, very deliberate. There's techniques that he uses in there. I'm not sure if you guys have picked up on them yet, but he'll do this
thing
where he repeats phrases two or three times. It's called implanting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's also partly his mind is kind of scattered enough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He finds himself. Because there are bits from when he was campaigning where he is literally just going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, just, and none of it makes any sense. He just goes from, like, one thought to something that's slightly related to something that's slightly related, and it's nowhere close to where he was before.
Yeah.
Like, there's a baby brought up Roy Moore. He said he wasn't happy with Roy Moore, but he was a Republican. He'd prefer that than a Democrat winning. He preferred Luther Strange, but Luther Strange had a lot of things going against him. And that's just a lot of Alabama shit.
Yeah.
Trump confirms he rejected a meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. So for tariffs and all that shit that he's starting up there, the trade, the trade wars he always wins, that are not going well.
That are not going well for anybody.
Yeah. And see, Trump on his General Assembly address, they were laughing with me. Oh, yeah, he spoke at the UN General Assembly. I was talking about how he had the most successful first 2 years of any presidency, and everybody laughed.
Yeah, Donald, they weren't laughing with you, just saying that.
No, he says
laughing
they were
at you.
Yeah, they really were laughing at you. And, if you caught that very... Well, there was that one bit where Justin Trudeau looked like he wanted to punch him. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Should have.
With that. Yeah.
He kind of should have. In fact, if he did that, I'm pretty sure it would pretty much give the Liberal Party in Canada the majority for the next few decades.
When I saw even the bits I saw of this thing, it started making me think of the bit in Billy Madison with the game show.
Yeah,
the guy's like, at no point in your incoherent rambling were you coming even close
to a response.
Yeah, were you coming close to a coherent thought, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We are all dumber
for
having
listened. We are all dumber. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Like that's how this should have ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that happened.
That was Wednesday.
Yeah. And then... finally, yesterday, on Thursday, Dr. Ford finally came forward to testify before the committee, and Kavanaugh, of course, would give his response afterwards. Oh, God. It was bad. It was very bad.
Yep.
Probably the most uncomfortable 12 hours I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I was glad I missed most of it.
Yeah, so... I unfortunately watched most of her testimony, and after watching it, I can basically tell you that I have absolutely no doubt that something happened to her and that it was very traumatic, because she shows all the signs of still having a strong degree of post-traumatic stress disorder from it happening. She was very soft-spoken. She didn't... really try to, you know, she didn't try to do any kind of theatrics or anything like that. She was just very straight ahead. She said that she was not really there by choice, but out of what she thought was her civic duty. She said she was frankly terrified, because as everybody knows, she had been getting lots of death threats and basically had to temporarily leave her home for a short amount of time.
Nobody would put themselves through that for nothing.
No. Pretty much everybody who saw that on that committee, and pretty much everybody else in the room, pretty much were unanimous in agreeing that she was definitely a very credible witness. She said that she was asked, you know, once or twice, like, you know, how certain are you that this was indeed Brett Kavanaugh? She said, with 100% certainty. For the record, the GOP actually, to have her cross-examined, they got a sex crimes prosecutor to do their thing. And so she asked some, you know, she basically, her job was to sort of pick apart Dr. Ford's testimony. Amongst the one was that talking about her fear of flying. And eventually it just kind of comes to realize that basically the old white assholes behind her had basically hung her ass out to dry. Then, of course, that was all over with. It was
That whole fear of flight thing is the thing that really got to me. It's like, oh, she's has a fear of flying, but she flies fairly regularly for work and pleasure.
For the does anybody here that do either of you guys by any chance have a fear of flying?
No,
I don't. But
do you know anyone who has a fear of flying?
One of the people, one of the podcasts I listen to is hosted by a guy who has a terrible fear of flights. And he,
and yeah, here's the thing: people who have fears of flying, sometimes their jobs say that they have to still fly. And they still do it.
Yeah, he still does it, but he also lives in Washington, D.C., so it regularly goes up to, like, New York. So he tries to do either, has, like, a driver take him or goes on train. Yeah. So he's also in his 60s, so that's the normal kind of travel he's used to.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he tries to avoid it when he can, but this is Tony Kornheiser, so he was on Monday Night Football, and that's primarily flying. A lot of over the country.
Yeah.
There are some he could do through driving, but a lot of flying. It was sort of the
it's a Xanax and Martini cocktail usually.
Yeah, and he would have
But you're basically a nervous wreck.
He would have to talk to like the stewardesses and the pilots. Just get to know them and know that these are good people. Give him some
confidence.
Like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like she's probably not as bad as that, but
Yeah.
Like, you can be afraid of stuff and still do it.
Yeah.
Like, I can be afraid of the dark and I can still sleep. It's not that it's not that hard.
Like, I have a almost debilitating fear of heights, and yet, you know, I've had times where I've had to, you know, climb up a ladder or something.
Yeah.
Get some work done. I mean, you know, it's, you don't want, obviously, I'm damn near shaking, but I still get it done, so.
You try to avoid
it. But anyway, point it, avoid it when you can. And so after that was done, Judge Kavanaugh came in and his whole session was just, where to
angry
begin?
Angry man, angry entitled man.
Very red-faced angry man.
You see the pictures of him like yelling and all the women behind him were like, what the fuck are you doing?
The scowls were so sharp it could cut diamond.
Yeah.
You know,
every single woman. Never seen this.
Mm-hmm. I had never seen it before. It was just, holy shit. And, you know, he was basically, I mean, that was his whole thing. He said, I wrote these myself. And then he basically just went on. He said, this whole thing, these last 2 weeks have basically been a disgrace. You know, it's basically the Democrats are trying to get back revenge for the election of President Trump in 2016. And get revenge for Clinton's, you know, all this shit.
Towing the party line.
Yeah. You know, he talked about how, you know, like he talked about with, you know, his daughter before they went to do this, they had family prayer, and his 10-year-old said, we need to pray for Dr. Ford, too. I will say the part that did get to me was the part when he was talking about, you know, I liked beer. I still like beer, and I don't know about you guys, but I have a really good sneaking suspicion that Judge Kavanaugh has a very serious drinking problem. And he needs to get help
really
for it.
Usually, say I like beer.
Yeah,
as like a thing to convince people of.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not doing yourself any favors.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, he's trying to say, I like beer, but I'm not addicted to it or something like that. Like, he's trying to convince himself and everybody.
Yeah. And
like, I don't remember getting blackout drunk. It's like, that's what blackout drunk is.
And that's why it's called blackout drunk.
You don't remember anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, Lindsey Graham made a scene.
Hmm.
And
The angry white man from said he was the angry white man from South Carolina.
Yeah. You know, he basically yelled for a good minute and a half. Basically saying you all should be ashamed of yourselves. Eventually, you know, after it was all over, we came up with today, and today they had the vote to send it to, the committee voted along party lines to send Kavanaugh forward to the final vote. However, they are delaying the final vote for 1 week so that they can let the FBI investigate these allegations. Yeah. And for the record, President Trump himself has that not only agreed with this, he also said that he thought Dr. Ford was actually a very credible witness and was actually kind of pissed off that no one around him told him how good of a witness she might seem.
Because they know him too well.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of people grandstanding as well during this whole process for the day. Yeah. Like Lindsey Graham was furious, yelling at the Democrats and all that. The Democrats just walked out.
Yeah.
They knew what was going to happen. Like, we're not going to take part in this shit.
Yeah.
There was somebody that was basically saying, you know, you guys lost the election. There are consequences for that. It's like, they won the election in 2012. That said, if anybody drops out of the Supreme Court, Obama will get to fill that seat. That happened, and they ignored it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Claiming all these secret rules that don't actually exist. Or
does the name Merrick Garland mean anything to anybody? Because he was one of President Obama's Supreme Court nominees, and his hearing was basically kept off for over 230 days. Mm-hmm. He didn't even get a hearing.
Nope. Didn't even get this far as Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
And I think basically everybody in America basically just woke up with a hangover.
Yeah. I would be at this point. I would be very surprised if he actually does get confirmed.
There's still a good 50-50 chance that he will, but
because in these sort of tense moments where you're like, well, somebody has to actually step up and be a rational person.
Yeah.
They will do everything they can to disappoint you. Because people are like, oh, Jeff Flake, he's the guy that's been standing up against Trump. He's going to do something, and he just bent over.
Mm. Well, he was the one who... Was it him or – well, he was the one who actually put forth the idea. He said he would only vote yes if they would delay the vote for 1 week so that they could allow this – allow the FBI to investigate these allegations.
Yeah. So, yeah, he did that, so got that for us, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got embarrassed on video in the elevator with the
which is the reason why this happened.
Yeah,
two of them, actually. And they both confronted him in an elevator before the final vote happened. And, I think, like I said this before we started, and I said this when we started, I really do feel like this is – I think that this is genuinely a turning point here because I really do get the sense that everybody in the United States – today basically realized that, wow, we have really let this go to shit, haven't we?
Yeah, the GOP is not a party for anybody but entitled white men.
Yeah.
Have you seen how throughout the whole process of Republicans saying, well, if this is the bar they want to set, this is a dangerous precedent. The bar being not raping women.
Yeah. That's... I'm sorry, but that's a fairly low bar.
Able to clear that. There was somebody had Republican women on who were like, oh, every boy does this. And it's like, no, they don't.
No, not really.
Majority don't do it.
The vast, vast, vast majority don't.
Mm. And it's like, that's a terrible thing to say, not only for teenage boys, but also teenage girls.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to happen to you. Try to make the best of it, I guess. Like, that's a terrible thing to say to any kids.
And I'm starting to wonder if it happened to her, if that's probably what she thinks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shockingly more common than you'd expect.
Oh, yeah, it is. Definitely is. I know that for a fact. But, yeah, so unfortunately we've got one more week before this whole saga is finished.
Yeah. Hopefully. Hopefully it goes the right way or else.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Just got a little bit of good news here next.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got, because as we've been saying, there is the backlash, and the backlash has been great. We're now about, let's see, it is September 28th, October starts Monday. We are now about six some odd weeks away from the midterm elections. Prepare yourselves, folks, because it's about to get nasty.
Ooh, yeah.
Man, if this isn't nasty, I don't know what the hell's going to happen.
And Ted Cruz was at a D.C. restaurant, and he got driven out by some anti-Kavanaugh protesters.
Yep. See, where were they at? Penn, oh, they were in Penn Quarter neighborhood, a Italian restaurant called Fila. With his wife, and there were just some people chanting, "We believe survivors." A woman came up to him, said, "Hi, I'd love to talk with you about Brett Kavanaugh tonight. I'm a constituent. Love to know what your vote is going to be tonight. I know that you're very close with Mr. Kavanaugh, and do you believe survivors, sir?" "See, Senator, I have a right to know what your position is on Brett Kavanaugh," another one told him. He responds, "God bless you, ma'am. Bless you as well. Really appreciate you." Woman then says she is a survivor of sexual assault, mentions the women who have accused Kavanaugh of sexual assault. "I know that you're close friends with him. Could you talk to him about that?" Cruz tells his wife at that point, "Let's go ahead and go." And he gets up, puts his coat back on, goes to leave. There's some video here of it.
Obviously, you wouldn't want to have any interaction with your constituents, you know.
Apparently, for the record, apparently it's been said that after the protesters left the restaurant, he snuck back in.
Okay.
Which means he really is that big of a weasel.
Yes.
We really wanted Italian.
Yeah. I can understand that feeling. You know,
we didn't want to just go to Fazoli's.
Yeah. I mean, you want to get some spaghetti and meatballs, you got to get some fucking spaghetti and meatballs. I understand the feeling.
Yeah.
But see, if you
any less of a human lizard.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like you don't respect the people you're representing. They don't have to respect you.
Yeah.
He doesn't respect the people that he's representing.
And that's why Beto O'Rourke is steadfastly gaining.
Last I checked, it was pretty much 50-50.
Yeah. He's actually over there talking to people.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz.
Republicans. He's got Republicans who've come out saying they're going to vote for O'Rourke. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, just for those who don't know, you remember back when one of Ted Cruz's biggest things was that Beto O'Rourke, when he was young, he was in a rock band. You know that?
Yeah.
You know who? People don't know that, but the other two guys in that band would later go on to start at the Drive-In and the Mars Volta.
He missed out.
His rock credibility is definitely there. Yeah.
Yeah. Went into the wrong line of work. No.
Yeah. But all right. Next story. Like I said, elections are coming. President Trump has claimed that China is going to be interfering in the 2018 elections.
He's
I think you might be
wrong.
Wanting to look a little farther north.
China. He's not wrong about that. China is doing some stuff, but
maybe his party shouldn't have cut funding for the protections for the election.
Yeah.
Like the Democrats voted for it.
Yeah.
And Republicans said, we're not going to renew this.
Yeah, a lot of writings are going back to paper ballots for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, to be honest, that's what they should have done anyway. But
yeah. So, yeah, you need to look with a little bit further north, as you just said, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I mean, we're not saying you need to leave Asia for this, but it's people you're looking for are a little north of the Chinese border.
Yeah.
And I guess he's cited on his Twitter accounts pictures of a paper in Des Moines, the Des Moines Register, that has paid sections from the China Daily,
mm-hmm.
Which is a state-sponsored paper.
Yeah.
English paper from People's Republic of China.
Yeah.
I actually do recommend it if you really do want to know what's, like, going on in China at any given time. Of course, you'll want to recognize that it is a state-sponsored paper, but as usual, you can get some pretty good information out of it.
Yeah. Should also point out that a lot of American radio stations are owned by Chinese companies, so they've got that
going on
too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
They're increasingly getting it invested in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
The video game industry, the world's biggest game is partially owned by China.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm.
It's Fortnite.
The world's biggest game is a game tournament or actual game?
No, Fortnite. It's they're a
Tencent. Oh, Fortnite is actually...
Yeah, Tencent owns a portion of Epic.
Wow.
I think they also own a portion of League, right?
Yep.
So two of the biggest games.
That's legit kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the terrorists have caused them to lose some money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Trump.
That and China is ramping up their blockage of Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, the great...
Which I guess
they call
also
it Great Firewall.
Yeah, people in China that have Switches, which isn't officially sold there, they can't get online because Google are.
Well, I know
infrastructure.
Yeah, I know, and if I know what I know about China, that's if they are like sort of blocking Google, that basically just means that shares and VPN sales are going to go up.
Yeah, except you can't legally use a VPN in China anymore.
No, but they'll still get them.
Yeah. So,
if there's one thing I've learned about China is that just because the government says something is illegal, that doesn't automatically that mean it's going to disappear.
Yeah, they'll make it hard for you, but it doesn't mean it's going to be completely, impossible.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Especially when it gets down to the local, when it gets down to like the local sector, because the local authorities in China are notorious for the amount of corruption that they deal with. So, But anyway, also this week, the administration has put forth, they're proposing some new green card rules, specifically ones that are going to disqualify those who use public assistance and public benefits.
Yep. Medicare and food stamps.
Yeah.
Public housing.
This has Stephen Miller stink all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's see. Yeah, it's just to block immigrants who are likely to become a drain on the economy.
Mm-hmm. Or
like
that's what they
the president.
Say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
is a drain on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's draining money from the government into his own pockets.
Yeah. Biggest con artist there is.
Perhaps.
He conned his way into the presidency.
I really don't think he knows what tariffs are and how they're supposed to operate.
No, because I think the guy who's running Ford has said they've essentially lost about $1 billion.
Yep.
Because mm-hmm. of steel tariffs and all that.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the American automobile industry has been hurting for a good while now, but
this isn't doing it any favors.
No.
Yeah. So.
But
thanks.
Oh, and then we got this other story. If you're a nature lover, you're not going to like this. Federal judge recently reversed the U.S. Forest and Wildlife Service decision. Fish and Wildlife Service. Federal judge actually reversed. Okay, sorry, I was getting I got this backwards. If you're a nature lover, you're actually going to like this because. It was federal judge. It reversed a decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to allow hunting of bears in Yellowstone National Park.
Yep.
So Yogi gets to live for another year, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, until Yellowstone blows.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe far away. Who knows?
Well, yeah. Actually, they've already got ideas on how to deal with that. Apparently, they've got a...
Bears to hide under the desks. They'll be okay. Yeah.
Well, they've got they've been developing this technology. They believe that if they're able to use it, if and when they get signals that Yellowstone is getting ready to blow, they can put this machine on top of it, and it'll convert all of that energy and force into steam.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think we talked about that in
We did
one of the shows a while back.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess this. Particularly in response to the Wildlife Service concluding that the grizzly bear was no longer a threatened species. These are federal protections, which resulted in 6 lawsuits from Native American tribes and wildlife advocates, which are consolidated into one that ended up causing this federal judge to reverse it.
Yeah.
So, for the record, and it needs to be put out, bear hunting is somewhat of a necessity, much like all hunting to a certain extent, because if the bear population control, it not only wrecks their whole ecosystem, but it basically means they will eat and destroy anything that they find.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't need the public to be doing the bear hunting.
Yeah.
Exactly. It says here they have not been legal to hunt bears in the lower 48 states since 1991.
Okay.
All right. And see, while they were doing this, Wyoming managed to issue 22 hunting permits, and Idaho won. But obviously, it's not going to be happening.
No.
Nope.
So they'll be getting their money back, probably. Yeah, right.
And next up, and you know, this is another story from Phil's country. Justin Trudeau and Nation of Canada are signing on with U.S. and the Trump administration to start a new war on drugs. This being in spite of the fact that recreational weed is now legal up in Canada.
Yeah. Remember that I was talking earlier about Justin Trudeau wanting to punch Trump in the face? This is why.
Yeah.
Yep. This is pretty much all part of the NAFTA negotiations.
Yep.
Trump is trying to strong arm them by saying, well, we can keep doing this, but you're going to have to, you know, do something about the drugs.
Yeah.
Something must be done. This is something. Therefore, we will do it.
Yeah.
Yep, they're legalizing it.
But at this point, at this point, like complete recreational legalization in the United States is now only a matter of time. It'll just take a little bit longer than, the Canadian route.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got more bureaucracy because we have to go through each of the states and then federally.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Trump's presidency is only a matter of time. So we got that going for us.
Tick. Yeah. All right. And now for anybody who is a Facebook user, here's some news you're not going to like. Facebook today announced that 50 million accounts had been exposed due to a FUAS exploit.
Whoops.
Yep, so this centered around, so when you're posting stuff to, like, a Facebook page, like a lot of CMSs and such, you can essentially do something where you view the page as the reader would see it. So you can double-check that your formatting and all that is working as intended.
Yep.
And I guess attackers were able to get into this version of the page that would then give them control of the person that owned that account.
Yep.
That would include posting and viewing information shared by any of that account's friends. No credit card information stored with the company was accessed.
No.
So it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Probably not as bad as it could have been, but still 50 million people today logged into their accounts were immediately logged back out.
Mm-hmm.
And forced to re-log in.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly password stuff should be okay, but I would assume those people would change it if they're smart.
Yeah, they would be. It would be advised that they change them.
Yeah, because
they say this
like a session jacking attack. Honestly, I'm not.
Yeah, they essentially said it was related to the tokens.
Yeah, session jacking.
Yeah. Yeah, they were essentially able to get hold of the tokens that the owner of the account had.
Yeah.
And they also said that there's another 40 million people that are being included as a precaution and also used the Vue.js feature in the past year.
Yeah.
I think they're supposed to be getting an email at some point soon just to follow up with more information.
Yeah. Well, because I'll have LastPass change my Facebook password.
Yep.
No way.
Yeah, for this at this point, you should. I think a lot of people may need to look into, you know, two-step login.
Yeah, probably not a bad idea.
Yeah.
If you're that concerned about it.
Yep.
I mean, it's a slight inconvenience, but measured against, you know, having your identity stolen.
Yep. So.
But
a fun game to play with Facebook is sign up for an account and put no personal information in and see what happens. It really struggles trying to figure out links to other people.
Yeah.
You know, don't use your real name or anything. And use it in a browser that has not used Facebook before.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do this with Edge, and it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I have a fake Facebook profile that thinks I'm a 75-year-old Republican in South Carolina for some reason. Yeah.
Oh, did you hear a great thing with Lindsey Graham at the beginning of today?
What's that?
He's like, as an old white guy from South Carolina, I'm supposed to shut up. But then he continued talking.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like, well, you were right, and then you kept talking.
Yeah. And just kept doing it. Okay, this next story just makes me go, what the?
Yeah, oh boy. So Six Flags Over St. Louis is now offering $300 for anyone who can spend 30 hours inside of a coffin.
Not happening.
Okay, so there are some caveats here. And the weird thing is it's been really popular. It's sort of a contest you have to enter.
Mm-hmm.
They've got 28,000 over at 28,000 entries, so they're doing it at each of the parks across the country. And I think they're essentially doing it by, let's see, they're accepting entries until midnight Wednesday. That's next Wednesday. Six people who give compelling reasons for wanting to participate will then be chosen to attempt to stay in the 2x7-foot coffins from 1 p.m. October 13th until 7 p.m. October 14th in the park. There are rules that are attached to this that makes it not as bad as it seems. There will be 6-minute bathroom break every hour, so you can get out. If you get out of the coffin for any other reason, you're disqualified. Participants are allowed to bring a friend during Fright Fest operating hours. When the park is closed, contestants have to brave their coffin alone and will be visited by the, quote, Fright Fest freaks employed in the haunted houses. The coffins will be closed, but they are cut away above the shoulders, so contestants' heads won't be covered, and they can sit up for 15-minute meals provided by the park. So, yeah, if you see the picture in the article, that's sort of how open they are.
Yeah.
Let's see. Any contestant who makes 30 hours will get 2 2019 Six Flag passes and Fright Fest tickets. Plus, they get to keep the coffin. If more than one person makes it 30 hours, a drawing would be held to find the sole winner of the $300 prize. And also, $300 is not enough.
No.
That's $10 an hour.
Stupid idea.
To waste 30 hours of your life for $300.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you get to keep the coffin, so.
Also, there's some additional information. Originally, the park planned to use, quote, slightly used coffins they used as props.
No,
but decided to make custom coffins for the contest after it took off, including a, quote, media coffin that we opened to reporters who were covering the spectacle.
Yeah.
Slightly used coffins is not a word you ever want to use, you hear or use.
Never want to hear that. Yeah. Slightly used by...
This one's not being used anymore, so we bought it on sale.
Oh, boy. America.
Desperate people.
Mm-hmm.
Want some money.
And what is a reason to want to stay 30 hours in a coffin?
There are people that like horror stuff. They really get into Halloween that much. This is the you know, Six Flags version of the, you know, keeping your hand on the car sort of thing they do back in the day.
Yeah.
Like the reason why that woman died of was it dehydration or over drinking of water?
I think she drank too much water and was not able to use it.
Which is a good thing. Like, hey, hold in your pee until your kidneys fail.
Yeah.
Of course, they got sued.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Boy. And next up, this is just a... Okay, so in Queensland, health scientists basically had to explain why a mom's orange turned purple overnight.
Yeah, so this is the thing that showed up on, like, Twitter and Facebook. So Queensland's mom named Miss Moffat, she cut up an orange for her 2-year-old son, cut up about half of it to feed him, left the rest out overnight. And next morning, it turned purple. She posted photos to Facebook, which eventually the Queensland health scientists saw the story and asked her to send in the orange and took the knife and a sharpener to test as well, and got a letter back this week. Oh, this was in 2015. Okay. Wow, that's a long time to get through this. And she got a letter that explained that a reaction between the anthocyanins, naturally occurring pigments in the orange, and the freshly sharpened knife had caused the color change. So the purple-blue color on the orange is most likely due to a reaction between the anthocyanin pigments naturally present in the orange and the traces of iron and or other metals from a freshly sharpened knife, because she had not apparently cleaned it vigorously. She said that while her husband was keen to try to repeat the experiment, she was more focused on ensuring her kids were well fed. So he's like, oh, I got to try this out. And apparently this is all also dependent was the time the orange spent in the cold room before we bought it, but most importantly, exposure to the metal filings on the steel that was used to sharpen the knife, which created the change in pH that we were the lucky ones to experience at all. This doesn't contaminate the oranges at all. So they were fine to eat if she didn't make it a big deal.
Yeah. You can't call them oranges anymore. But they're purples now.
They're purples now.
Oranges?
Yeah. Oranges? Oh. Oranges, yeah. Oranges are one of those fruits that they're one of all, pretty much them and all of the citrus-based fruits are really weird because they tend to have these really odd chemical reactions when they come in contact with other stuff.
Yeah, like if you eat pineapple and have it in your mouth too long, it starts eating away at your cheek.
Yeah.
Or like if you brush your teeth and, or like, here's the old standby. If you brush your teeth and then, you know, like say after you've gotten out of a shower and then you go to breakfast and drink some orange juice and it basically tastes like soap.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. But anyway, next up in science news, the nation of Japan officially landed 2 rovers on the Ryugu asteroid last week, and they got some amazing photos and videos out of it, too.
Yep. So they're the first country space agency to do this, to get 2 rovers on it. They got a 15-frame video, as well as a number of screenshots. From the surface of Ryugu, which is a kilometer-wide asteroid that has been visited by the agency's Hayabusa spacecraft. So there's some great shots there, and the video is pretty cool. These rovers are different from NASA's Mars rovers. They don't have wheels.
Mm-hmm.
they hop around the asteroid.
Yep.
Yep. And the weird thing is that the gravity is so light on the asteroid, it takes about 15 minutes for them to come down.
Mm-hmm.
But they can move about 15 meters or 50 feet horizontally.
Yep.
That's so,
hell of a jump distance wise, but really slow.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not big at all.
Hmm.
But yeah, they have some tweets up, I guess, as well. Yeah, you can click on the links on the tweets and look at the other stuff they have. But yeah, they are, the main mission of these rovers is to gather materials from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be happening by the end of October. They're going to have the spacecraft actually land on the asteroid after blowing a small crater in it using explosives. So samples that haven't been exposed to space can be gathered from below the object's surface. After examining the partisan object and taking samples, Hayabusa 2 will depart Ryugu in December 2019 and before returning to Earth by the end of 2020 with cargo of its supplies or its samples. And it'll be the world's first sample return mission to a C-type asteroid. And so it's sort of an attempt to find out more about the universe's origins.
Yeah. Also sets them up to, for asteroid mining, because that's going to happen.
Yep. Oh, it's coming. It's pretty much an inevitability at this point. It's just who's going to be the first to start doing it.
Yeah. I noticed none of us are surprised that Japan was the first to land on an asteroid.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean...
Well, they're the first to land, too. I think NASA got one landed on one a while ago.
Hmm.
But
they didn't get in nearly as good the type of results as Japan
yeah,
did.
Yeah, NASA says here NASA's sample retrieval mission is due to arrive back on Earth in 2023.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So... They're going to be back sooner. Well,
yep.
Well, Japan would.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the country that brought us, Pat Labor and Planet S and Gundam, and let's just say that it's kind of in the Japanese character.
Yeah.
Wasn't in the South Park episode about the elevator to heaven?
Ladder to heaven.
Ladder to heaven. That was Japan.
And the Japanese end up getting there first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, it turned out to be fake, but
yeah.
But anyway, in archaeological news, off the coast of Lisbon port in Portugal, they found a 400-year-old shipwreck.
Yep, it's believed to have been returning from India, laden with spices.
Hmm.
So they're saying
this was back when port.
What's that?
I was going to say, this was back when Portugal basically controlled the spice trade.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, this is from they call this the discovery of the decade.
Hmm.
In Portugal, this is the most important find of all time.
Hmm.
So, in and around this shipwreck, 40 feet below the surface, divers found spices, 9 bronze cannons engraved with the Portuguese coat of arms, Chinese ceramics, and cowrie shells. A type of currency used to trade slaves during the colonial era.
Hmm.
They found this on September 3rd off the coast of Cascais, a resort town on the outskirts of Lisbon. The shipwreck and its objects were very well preserved. They believe the ship was wrecked between 1575 and 1625, and Portugal's spice trade with India was at its peak. 94 Portuguese ship Our Lady of the Martyrs was discovered near Fort of São João da Barra, a military defense complex near Cascais. Mm-hmm. The wreck was found as part of a 10-year-old archaeological project backed by the Municipal Council of Cascais, the Navy, the Portuguese government, and Nova University of Lisbon. So it's pretty neat stuff going on.
Yeah, they're not auctioning these items off. I can't.
Imagine. I would not be surprised if China contacts them, because you talked about how there was some old Chinese ceramics and stuff in there.
Yeah,
Yeah, they're pretty on hand when it comes to old Chinese antiquities and stuff. So
yeah.
They'll probably be getting a phone call from Beijing any day now.
Yeah, yeah. Winnie the Pooh wants his back.
Anyway.
But
keep moving.
And now for probably the least serious story we've had today. Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts, I'm going to be honest, very inferior to Krispy Kreme donuts. I'm just going to put that right out there.
If you don't agree, then screw you. We got a bunch of Dunkins. And a bunch of local donut shops.
Yeah.
They're actually pretty good.
Yeah, so you poor bastard.
They're dropping donuts from the name and they're just going to be called Dunkins now?
Dunkin. Yep. Yeah.
Which I've never seen
fries. To be fair, they've been doing a lot of stuff other than donuts for like a decade now.
Yeah, they have a lot of breakfast food and drinks and such.
Yeah, it's a lot like what Tim Hortons does, only worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I go get like a half dozen, it's kind of overly dry.
Yeah.
Unless you get like the glazed.
Yeah.
Glazed is usually pretty good.
See, that's why you need a Krispy Kreme, because if you get – it doesn't matter what dozen is and how dry they are. It'll always be covered in glaze.
Yep.
Yeah, so they're changing the name from Dunkin' Donuts to Dunkin'. Mm-hmm. The logo that shows is – see, Dunkin' is in orange, and the apostrophe is pink. Since before it's Dunkin' is in orange, Donuts is in pink. Mm. So like, here's the last remnants –
of the pink.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pink is now just an apostrophe.
Yeah.
The pink stands all right. for donuts.
Hmm.
Let's see. Now for all of you radio fans, and believe it or not, of all the like old media, radio is the one that still managed to hang on pretty well.
Hmm.
Sirius XM is buying Pandora for $3.5 billion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably could have been Pandora buying Sirius if it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but yeah, Pandora's kind of been struggling the last few years.
So yeah. Spotify and the other services have been eating their lunch.
Hmm.
Pretty much.
Basically being like on-demand audio stations versus Pandora just being like stations that you have no real control over.
Yeah, except yeah. the
Sirius kind of is the premium Sirius Pandora XM.
Do. Okay.
Yeah. Sirius XM. Aren't they the ones that own iHeartRadio?
They're actual radio stations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, they
Howard Stern, I think.
Howard Stern's like their big thing, but I think they also have like Alex Jones and a bunch of other stuff.
Hmm.
Probably anything you'd want to listen to on a radio, there's probably a station for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Whether it's crazy, it's music, or actual news.
Mm. That's why I was talking about iHeartRadio. You can pretty much put the app on your phone, and there's like a bunch of stations that are basically completely specifically customized to fit like one specific niche that you have. Like the Beatles, they've got at least two or three different all Beatles channels. If you like old classic rock, they've got several of those, or country and western, and of course they got like the Eagles, Led Zeppelin, that type of specific channels as well.
They also have like radio stations from across the country, like just their local feeds that you can tune into, so that's kind of cool too.
Yeah
The last place I worked at had a Sirius XM like a subscription to like play it over the PA for people to listen to. The hilarious thing is occasionally we just get on the demo station.
Mm.
So we just play like demos of other stations. It's like, that's how you could tell their subscription ran out or something like that. Like they were on the free station for a little bit where somebody realized, oh, we got to pay for our subscription.
Yeah.
Then they'd only just do like the decade stations.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's on 70s today. Or it's on the 90s. I can hear music I know.
Yeah.
Music I don't want to listen to anymore.
Because I already lived through it and hated it the first time.
Yeah, so I guess Sirius XM has 36 million subscribers in North America. Pandora has 70 million monthly listeners.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty big user base you're acquiring there.
Yeah. And especially if...
All right.
I think they're basically acquiring Pandora to have like an online presence.
Yeah.
Pretty much. All right. Well, next up.
Trailers.
Yep, trailers. We got our trailers. And first up, we got a new trailer for Creed 2. This, of course, is the sort of sequel series to the Rocky series.
Yeah, featuring Adonis Creed, Apollo's estranged son.
Yeah, his son.
Son from an affair, essentially. Yeah, in this trailer, you get to actually see... Drago. You get to see Drago and his son.
Okay.
Ivan Drago, played by the original guy.
Yep, Dolph Lundgren. And the guy that got to play his son is a freakish monster. So it fits.
Yeah.
I think they have them doing like the typical like weigh-in stuff, standing next to each other, and like he's like a solid like 8 to 12 inches taller than him. Yeah, Michael B. Jordan is playing Adonis again. I think it got pretty much everybody back. Sylvester Stallone, Tessa Thompson. I think those are the main three. Yeah. It is basically the son of Apollo Creed facing off against the son of Ivan Drago.
Yeah. I love how they're just remaking the same movies, but with the children this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also sort of like the first movie, like a son coming to grips with his father's legacy. While having to face a monster.
Yeah.
Looks
like a good movie.
Yep. Probably first one's really good. It's going to be in theaters on November 21st.
Yeah.
So definitely be a good like Thanksgiving weekend movie to go to.
Yeah. Yeah, holiday season is pretty stacked for movies this year.
Yep. And now that Star Wars is there, everyone's like, okay, we'll get on the holiday money.
Yeah.
So. And finally, our last story for the night, we got our first look at Dark Phoenix.
Yep.
Those who don't know, the Dark Phoenix saga was like the first major event story in the Uncanny X-Men. It's basically the one where the whole idea of, you know, when Jean Grey became Phoenix and the Phoenix power inside of her starts taking over and basically turns her slowly evil. It's also just a damn good story in general. It was written by Chris Claremont, who has, you know, he was the longtime X-Men writer for almost. And it was drawn by John Byrne, who would later go on to work with DC and help restart Superman in the mid-80s after Infinity Crisis, after a Crisis on Infinite Earths. What do you guys think?
I'm in.
Yeah, looks pretty good.
You know, it does look pretty good. I think... you know, Fox has kind of turned it around with their Marvel movies lately.
Yeah.
Kind of been really liking what they've been doing, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and the guy they got running this is Simon Kinberg. This is one of his first direct directorial gigs, but he's written a bunch of stuff. Let's see, he wrote Triple X, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He wrote X-Men Last Stand, Jumper, the screenplay, Sherlock Holmes. Okay, and he worked a lot on the previous X-Men movies, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse, Star Wars Rebels coming up. Yeah, Dark Phoenix. He's working, I guess he's working on the Star Wars Boba Fett movie. The upcoming Logan's Run remake. And he has a lot of producer credits on, like, Legion, Deadpool 2, like a lot of the Fox movie stuff, The Martian, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
It seems like he's one of the big guys at Fox.
Yeah, well, he's doing a pretty good job, so. Might as well keep on tapping him.
Yep.
All right. And, all right, so I guess we've got a show, folks.
And we can finally put this shit of a week past behind us.
Yep.
And we washed our hands. At least another to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would like to remind our users, if you've got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, or, you know, anything like that, you can contact us at letsweekenders.com. I mean, letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can find our little podcasts at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org. Pretty much any place where, you know, podcasts like ours can be downloaded and listened to. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Pam Perkins, and for Bonapo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi, say good night, sleep tight. I think we're all going to need a nice hot shower after all of this.